Welcome back to the Sustainability Report, a financial reporting podcast. For those of you who've been with us through our previous episodes, you know we've spent a significant amount of time untangling the complex web of global sustainability regulations. We've done deep dives into CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive in Europe, the legislative shifts in California, and the global baselines being set by the ISSB. And historically, our focus has been clinical, analyzing what the regulations say and theoretically how they might apply to US-based organizations. It's no longer just about what the rules are, it's about how companies are actually functioning under the weight of them. Today, we're moving from theory to practice, and we're devoting this entire episode to the operational how, the strategies, the hurdles, and the real-world approaches to sustainability reporting compliance. So to help us navigate this, I am thrilled to be joined by two leaders who are currently in the driver's seat of this transformation. We have Savannah Wilson from the Estee Lauder Companies and Kenny Green from Booking Holdings. And of course, Bryce is rejoining us to provide his perspective. So Savannah and Kenny, it's a pleasure to have you here today. I want to point out this is the first time on this podcast we've had guests, so it's an extra added thrill and bonus for us. And to kick things off, I was thinking you could share a little bit about your journey in sustainability that led to your current roles, and then which of the key sustainability reporting regulations are currently at the top of your organization's priority list. So maybe Savannah, I can start with you.
Great. Yes. Thank you. Happy to be here. My name is Savannah Wilson. I'm from the Estee Lauder Companies. I'm a senior manager working on ESG regulatory reporting. My background before my role here is actually in operations management and supply chain. It was, I think, back in school when I realized, though, that operations and supply chain are on the same team as sustainability. So that is actually what kickstarted my journey into studying sustainability and eventually leading me here to this role. But I have been with ELC, the Estee Lauder Companies, for the past almost 5 years. I actually started out with legal sustainability, so I really got a good foundation on how our brands are talking about it, what it takes to substantiate sustainability claims. And then I moved over to our corporate sustainability department, and I started on the climate team to work a bit more on strategy. And that is where I actually got started working on our voluntary reporting. So working on things like our climate transition plan and our CDP disclosure. And then about 2 years now, I actually moved over into the ESG role that I am in now and focusing on a lot of our priority regulations related to disclosure, such as CSRD, ISSB in Mexico and Australia, and the California climate reporting laws.
Thank you. And what about you, Kenny?
My name is Kenny Green. I'm the sustainability controller for Booking Holdings. My career has been a great and colorful one. Spent many years in accounting and finance. I'm a CPA. Started out in public accounting, did stints in internal audit. Now I was a global controller as well, but eventually got bit by the bug around purpose. And so ended up landing in sustainability, which fuses my financial background with just the efforts of let's do good in the world. And so now I'm at Booking Holdings, the global controller here. So just happy to be here to champion the sustainability mission within finance.
Bryce, we've got some really great guests today. Why don't you just give us a quick reminder about some of the great things you're working on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back, Louise. I must be doing something right, being able to come back.
Always.
But thanks, and happy to be joined by Savannah and Kenny here. And Kenny, I'm a CPA as well, and got bit by that purpose bug. So this makes two of us. But I think, you know, following up on kind of part of your intro was that we have historically talked about what the regulations say and how they could apply to U.S. companies. And we've definitely provided some nuggets of information about how companies are really trying to practically dive into those regulations. But I'm super excited that we can spend an entire episode on it. Because in reality, and like for Kenny and Savannah, most U.S. companies don't just have to comply with one sustainability reporting regulation. It's typically at least two. And in many cases, like for Savannah and Kenny, it's many regulations that they have to comply with. So it is a very practical question. The most common ones are the ones that we just heard about that I interact with clients on. California, jurisdictional adoption of ISSB, which will continue to expand, CSRD, the CSDDD, all those. And it's really because of this volume that it becomes a complex exercise for any organization. And because it becomes a complex exercise, that's why we see companies moving forward in their programs, even though there has been a lot of uncertainty that we've talked about over the past year, in 2025 in particular. So maybe that's like the key area to start with, Louise, is how are you actually approaching navigating that volume of frameworks to comply with?
Ooh, the million-dollar question. Yeah. So let's dive right in. So I think we got the theory out of the way, and now we're going to spend the rest of the time on practice. So knowing that Savannah and Kenny both work for organizations that have to comply with the various sustainability reporting regulations, maybe Savannah, I can start with you. How is Estee Lauder companies organizationally responding to upcoming reporting demands? How are you building out your infrastructure?
Sure. Yes. Happy to speak to that. So we are taking a primarily global and highly cross-functional approach, especially for these larger regulations like CSRD and ISSB. So in this process, we've had to start out by identifying and, getting in touch with the right leaders and partners within our business to establish their buy-in and their understanding pretty early on. And then from there, we can focus on project management and getting all the right partners in the right room to, understand their next steps. So one example of that is we have a quarterly working group where we meet to talk about the EU Green Deal package and other applicable regulations outside of just the disclosure ones. And we flag different milestones and any risks that we may have to timeline, so everyone's up to date on that end. And then regarding ESG disclosure, which my team is in charge of, we have a smaller core team, which is made up of our finance, our financial controls, and our SEC reporting teams. And we're the ones who are really more in the weeds with the understanding of the requirements and producing the reports. We do work closely with a lot of other teams within our business. So, of course, it is an all-hands-on-deck situation. We work with legal and global public affairs to align on interpretation and expectation there. And then we also have to work with a lot of subject matter experts with data collection. So there's a number of functions within our business, such as our climate team, environmental health and safety, value chain and responsible sourcing, HR, et cetera. These are the data owners within our company, and they put in a lot of work to transform the data into what the regulation is asking for. And then finally, with upcoming regional regulations like ISSB in Mexico and Australia, we pull in a lot of those regional teams to get their expertise in alignment on the local reporting practices that they have. So again, overall, this is driven primarily as a centralized approach. And we do that for a need for resource consolidation and consistent reporting. But also our global teams have a bit more visibility when it comes to certain factors like investor relations and enterprise risk management.
Yeah, and we think about it as the three-legged stool. So we have these three, I think, distinct disciplines between sustainability, sustainability finance, and legal that are all involved in all of our sustainability disclosures. And so getting these groups involved early is what we like to do around any disclosure, is one of the key things that we get to do. But it brings a different perspective, because I think each one has a discipline and bring insight into any disclosure we want to make. So it really works well for us.
And I'm going to stay with you, Kenny. So what were the key triggers that kickstarted Booking Holdings' focus on embarking on designing a robust sustainability reporting program? So, like, was it a specific regulation that hit you, or is it a culmination of factors?
I think it's a yes and with to respond to that. And I, you know, I think Bryce captured it with the word volume. So there is just a number of regulations that are coming online from different jurisdictions around the world. I think those regulations help to get finance's attention to say that we should, you know, get some support and resources within finance. I think many companies have sustainability teams that were doing voluntary reporting, and I was one of that before. I landed here at Booking Holdings. And so that shift now from voluntary reporting to regulatory reporting, I think really piqued the interest of finance to get involved in the reporting. And one of the things also is that a lot of this reporting now has to be audit ready. And that discipline is something that finance teams are used to doing. We have experience in getting audit-ready data. That is one of the things and reasons I think finance is very suited to help with these disclosures, having that experience of bringing data to that level of reporting.
Thank you for mentioning the auditors. Because it's true, the sooner that you get the auditors in, the less at the back end that you have something that you can't necessarily remediate very easily. So
no one wants to get in a position where they've designed a process, built it out, and then they bring in their assurance provider and they say there's something wrong with this process and you have to go back, rebuild or redesign. Earlier the better. I want to go back to something you mentioned, Louise. You opened this little segment here with the $1 million question. How do you organize your implementation program? And when I talk to clients, there's a spectrum of options, right? It's not a one-size-fits-all answer. Savannah was talking about a centralized approach with a bit of decentralization. That's what I see most companies trying to take. But you have decentralization on one side of that spectrum where you kind of just say, hey, subsidiaries and parents, wherever you have an obligation, it's on you. You deal with it. You collect the data, you do the reporting. On the complete other side is a fully centralized approach where you are centralizing a lot of that data collection and reporting. And I mentioned a hybrid approach. That's typically what we see companies trying to do. And when they're going for a hybrid approach, what they're trying to do is unlock or optimize efficiencies with centralization. Some of the places that I've seen that unlock of efficiencies are trying to centralize your technology solutions, infrastructure around the technology, how you collect, maintain, and store data, like a centralized data lake. Those are all good places to look to try and figure out, are there ways to centralize elements of this that create cost efficiencies or maybe resource efficiencies that Savannah was talking about?
Okay. And I think maybe one very concrete example might be in Mexico is one jurisdiction that has for public, so subsidiaries that may be publicly listed in Mexico, they have a kind of ISSB requirement. But then for subsidiaries that report under Mexican FRS and are private, they have 30 IBSOs, 30 metrics, and they have to be reported at the level of Mexico. And so I know that companies are trying to figure out, how do I get out of the systems the level of data I need for that reporting when a lot of what I'm doing is on a more global or higher level? So maybe we can pivot a little bit here. We spent some time discussing how organizations structure their programs to navigate this complex web of reporting regulations. I'd like to dive into those programs a bit and spend some time discussing how are you navigating, and Kenny mentioned before, the volume of regulations. So maybe I can start, Kenny, with how are you approaching these similar but different regulatory compliance needs, knowing that they're somewhat similar in reporting topics. So I think of like GHG emissions, right? I mean, most of them require some level of GHG emissions, but maybe not all three scopes, or maybe you're using a different framework that is prescribed or isn't prescribed. So how are you navigating this? I know we use the word complexity a lot, but I'll use it again, complexity.
It is complex. and I have to think of another word as well use. But I think the way we think about it is, I think you hit it on the head there, where we have to understand a common denominator. So GHG, the environmental pillar, For sustainability, that's pretty much across the board. I think that concern is pretty much everywhere around the world. Our struggle is we can collect this information on a consolidated, but then how do we make sure it satisfies local reporting requirements? So that is an issue that we have here of making sure that we have the data globally and locally. So that's what we're looking at to build our structure, that we can have it easily, that we can bifurcate out a local jurisdiction. I think that's the, I don't know, holy grail that we'll get to at some point, that we want to get there. But I think until we get there, it will be, lack of a better word, complexity of pulling this out and separating it. I think one of the goals that I think about is like, how can we build once and report many? I think one to many is the goal that we're looking for. How can we do that effectively? So even while we're building out reporting capabilities locally, in the back of my mind, we're looking at it holistically. How can we build this once, use it in many different places? What does this mean? Even if we have to collect a new data point for a local jurisdiction, this may be the first time here, but what could we do on a global scale as well? So I think we're thinking that building this from the ground up, and even though it feels patchwork, we're building, I think, a matrix here that that eventually we would have something that would be able to be applied globally and then focused locally. But I do agree it takes time.
Kenny, you're a CPA, like myself and Louise.
Yes.
When I think about large organizations on the financial reporting side, a lot of them have to go from US GAAP to IFRS for statutory accounting purposes. Are you thinking about, like, when we think about this patchwork, and this is what's coming to mind for me when you're talking about building common denominator, building up from there for statutory or local purposes. Like, is that a similar process? Like, are you trying to take learnings from that process and apply it into the sustainability reporting world?
Oh, 100%. My background was being a global controller. So I had business units around the world and they had statutory reporting purposes. We were consolidating for SEC reporting. So used to that network of just that perspective of you're reporting something, you know, US GAAP, then you have IFRS, there are differences we have to convert. But what we would do is we would make sure that we want to make sure what we have meets the local requirements. So I think that's a heavy bar to make sure that we cross that bar. But you want to think about you're producing something for the part, but do you consider the whole? And that's one of the ways we think about sustainability reporting. We are reporting our story for a company. We have five core brands. They are different. And we're reporting a story for all five core brands, but we want to make sure it is true to the brand, true to that jurisdiction, but also to the company as a whole. So it is a process to make sure that we are considerate
and consistent with the financial reporting.
Right.
So, Savannah, regulations are continuing to emerge daily, I think, according to the alerts I get. So Mexico and Australia are just two examples. So how do you decide, or how does Estee Lauder companies decide where to focus your resources when you're facing different timelines and requirements across the globe? So I have, I work with some of my colleagues in Latin America, and they talk about the fact that often at least for now, sometimes the same teams might be doing the financial reporting and the sustainability reporting. So how do you avoid duplicating efforts, and how do you also ensure that the people doing it have the capacity and time to do the reporting?
Absolutely. It's a lot of collaboration, a lot of staying in touch. It's really been one of the biggest challenges that we've had with this evolving regulatory landscape, all these different competing priorities. You really have to be focused and balanced in your approach to make sure you have the resources in place and that everyone, you know, is prepped to do this work. So I will say, fortunately, we do have a strong foundation of reporting at the Estee Lauder companies along with data collection. So at least we didn't have to build this capability from scratch. But now we are thinking of how can we layer onto this foundation in a resource efficient way, right? So I think one of the big buzzwords of this moment is interoperability. So we've actually been working with our KPMG partners to help analyze this and evaluate interoperability within all the different regulations that we're working on. Hopefully finding a place where we can, as Kenny said, build once, use many, or I think that's really the goal at this moment. I will say that we've also had to take a long-term view using kind of, I like to call them stacked timelines, where we have all in one place put out all the different milestones, timelines, including assurance timelines, to see what's going to be needed in one spot to meet all these regulations. And so taking that bird's eye view has been really helpful, not just to, of course, see everything that's coming down the pipe, but also to work backwards and create those interim tasks, those deadlines. You can better understand where there might be project dependencies or even bottlenecks, and you can use that to help communicate upfront to your different partners of, you know, when is a good time to work on this? Can we be a little bit flexible with this deadline? I think you have to be very flexible in this environment and give everybody, you know, space to figure it all out. And so that's what we're currently trying to manage.
Can we talk about California just for a minute? The California climate laws, I don't want them to get lost in this conversation. So what do you see as the biggest operational challenge in complying with these new rules? How does this compare to what you've been, I think, to date, we've kind of really been focused on CSRD. So how would you say that compares to the work you're already doing for CSRD?
So I'd have to say that from our point of view, the current challenge for us has really been monitoring and navigating these legal uncertainties that have been surrounding the California climate laws, as well as waiting for any clarity on the regulations themselves, since that is also moving along in the background. So luckily, we have been on our climate journey with GHG accounting, data collection, even with our climate risk assessments. We've been doing those for a few years. So in terms of the subject matter of these laws, we have been in a good place. So a lot of that legwork did start up front. It is just a waiting game at this point. But compared to CSRD, I think the scope of these laws are actually, these California climate laws are a bit narrower. So we do expect that, you know, and have been focusing the work around CSRD because it's broader, more significant. It covers a lot more topics with the environmental, social, and governance pillars. So it has been a bigger lift and has a lot more stakeholder involvement. So that's where we've placed a lot of priority.
I agree with that. I think in California, one of the issue is just knowing when it's finalized. I think just having the legal stays and the challenges there with that, we're monitoring those. I think that's more of a challenge than anything else. We've already been reporting our greenhouse gas emission for years. We understand our climate risks. I think those are not new concepts for us, so I don't see much difficulty in that. I think for us, it's more understanding the regulations, clarity around the doing business in California concept. I think that has been something that's been challenging, how they have described the definition, but trying to apply it to a complex corporate structure, I think is very challenging, I would say. But I think once we clear that, the actual mechanics of pulling the greenhouse gas emissions and climate risks is not a difficult thing for our organization.
Yeah, I want to highlight your point about legal, both of you, because we, Bryce and I, on our last podcast, were making the same point around CSRD and just understanding with legal counsel, whether it's internal or external, any conflicts or any concerns around different jurisdictions that may have different legal requirements and what you can and can't report. So getting your heads, around that. We've been saying from the beginning, talk to legal. So I appreciate your reiterating that. And Kenny, maybe, you know, we've been talking a lot now about the strategic and regulatory complexities, but ultimately this work is driven by people. So the journey to efficient and effective sustainability reporting is a long and demanding one. How do you personally stay motivated through the challenges and the changes and the shifts? And what strategies have you found are the most effective for keeping your teams and your stakeholders, you know, that you depend on engaged and aligned?
I think focusing on why. Why are we here? Like, what keeps me excited about sustainability is, as I mentioned in the beginning of the chat here, just centering on purpose. Why are we here? I think for my company as an organization, like, we, our mission is to make it easier for people to see the world, to experience the world. I mean, such a great, great mission. And I get to help tell that sustainability story. So when it gets to the hard times, you know, when you're collecting numbers and you're looking at spreadsheets and data, I try to remind myself that why am I here? What keeps this exciting? Like, look at the mission that we're supporting. And we get to tell a story about how we are impacting, doing great work to impact, you know, lower our impact on the environment, to do these great social programs. I think that is the thing that drives me for here. And that's what I like to remind the teams when we are doing this work, or especially when you're approaching someone who's new to sustainability and you may be asking for a new data point. You have to recognize that that is extra work for them, and explaining to them the why and what makes this a great thing to do. So that's what keeps me going, is that optimism.
Appreciate that. Savannah, what about you?
Sure. So personally, I do agree with everything you're saying here too, Kenny. And I'm also myself a believer in what regulations can do to transform a business and those opportunities. I do think that they help to create a more level playing field, identify where companies need to improve. So I know, as Kenny said, day to day, it is a tough balance for all of these different priorities. But if you can keep your eye on that end goal and keep your team's eyes on that end state, then it can really help companies, I think, drive into their own value chains, in their business models, and then use that to create value and mitigate any potential risks.
That's a really good perspective, that the regulations really are actually helping you to achieve, you know, because up until now it's been voluntary reporting.
Maybe I could add to that, because I think that's an important point, right? And we talk about, well, you opened with this, Savannah, like getting stakeholder buy-in. It's really important to these programs. And for large multinationals like yourselves and a lot of our listeners, you have to think about stakeholder buy-in across the organization. And when you're thinking about that, some of them don't operate thinking, oh, this is a compliance need. I need to go all hands on deck. There's other what's in it for me, which you have used before. Like, there's other what's in it for me's for different stakeholders. And what I've found, and I mean, a lot of clients ask us this question, I need help getting this stakeholder to buy in. How do I do that? The most effective way that I've found to do that is to say, yes, this is a compliance need. We're going to need this type of resource. We're going to need this type of funding. But I'm not just going to give you compliance. We're also going to identify opportunities to use what we create out of this to support other strategic initiatives, maybe innovate on our technology stack, make more efficient processes. Maybe what we do in the sustainability space is we're creating a future state. It's going to be a proof of concept for a different reporting process that's outside of sustainability. So trying to do, kind of use a yes and analogy before. This is a yes and ... And it's up to our organizations to figure out what is the and. What are those additional opportunities that you expect that you can realize through this compliance effort?
Well, on that positive note, Bryce, maybe we can start wrapping up with some, you know, final thoughts. Maybe I could just first summarize what I heard, and you'll let me know if I misheard. Dealing or working with multiple compliance needs that are similar but different and along similar timelines can be complex. There's that word again, and time consuming, but really it is, especially when you have people who are working on other projects within the organization. Financial reporting is one example, or legal. So don't underestimate the lift and teamwork that's required to get it done. With that being said, there are ways to design your program to identify and take advantage of these of efficiencies that exist. And so whether that's how you organize your program or how the nuts and bolts work regarding comparing and contrasting disclosure requirements, for example, and Bryce, we talk about this sometimes. So maybe I can get your final thoughts, Savannah. for companies that want to be proactive, what's one piece of advice you'd give them?
This is going to sound like a broken record, I think, of course, but get started early, of course, and make sure you have identified those right players in your company and determined roles and responsibilities early on. For instance, you're definitely going to need your finance teams, as we've talked about during this podcast, but also make sure your leadership is fully aware and aligned on your compliance strategy. Again, focusing on that buy-in. I think the key thing is, like you've just said, we're going to need a lot of collaboration and cross-functional work to do this. So you can't be afraid to break down silos as you forge ahead with these regulations.
Thank you for that. And Kenny, what is a lesson learned that you can share that might save some companies some time or even a headache as they go through their sustainability reporting journey?
Yeah, I think it's really to make sure you get buy-in, that people understand the why. Understand that the process owner are not just data providers, they are co-creators with you. They're partners, and you want to make sure, I think Bryce mentioned before, just about around compliance, that I think compliance brought more feet to the table, but we were already telling our sustainability story. And so we were telling it because it was useful, because it was something that our stakeholders wanted to hear. It was a business ad and brought value. So now we have compliance also joining and saying, let's talk about the sustainability story. So I think letting process owners and co-creators in the business know that that's why we're here, because of the story that we want to tell. And the regulations have brought structure. I think the positive piece that it brought structure, that we can compare ourselves against our peers and other players in the space. But the reason we're here, because we think we have a value add story.
And maybe, Louise, I could add a lesson learned as well for our listeners, because like, we are talking about sustainability reporting and we are standing up new processes. But at the end of the day, it's a reporting process. And a lot of our organizations have gone through reporting changes in the past. And there are going to be lessons that you have learned, that we've all learned from going through those processes. There's things that worked, things that didn't work. And there's probably things within your existing reporting processes in the current state that are working well and are not working well. So there's a lot of lessons learned within each organization currently that you can then deploy into your sustainability reporting process. I can't remember which one of you mentioned it, but one of you mentioned kind of starting with a clean slate. I think it was you, Kenny. And when you're starting with a clean slate, you have a lot of opportunity, but look back on what you have already learned from past practice.
Thanks, Bryce. Maybe thinking ahead a couple of years, Savannah, what do you hope to have achieved with your sustainability reporting program at Estee Lauder Companies, just beyond compliance?
Right. So our reporting has always started off as voluntary and focused on transparency. So We've already had this focus outside of just compliance, but our goal is to continue to build on that, to build on building that transparency, as well as expanding visibility to the stakeholders that can better use our reporting. So we'd like to grow on that, but also we would like to have it more integrated into our products and commercial side of the business, so we can help drive further value within the business for different stakeholders, investors, et cetera.
Kenny, what are you looking for in the next couple of years? What do you hope to have achieved with your sustainability reporting program?
Yeah, I think it's similar to Savannah, that I think we're starting with compliance, but I'm thinking of moving from compliance to conviction, that we use this sustainability reporting and data to be decision useful. It shows the value that we have in our sustainability story, and we start to embed that thinking even at the lowest levels in the organization. So I see this as a centralized place that people can hear and understand our story and help us champion our story internally and externally. So I just look at this as, with such a positive attitude, that we get to tell our story and that people are interested in the story. And our reports can be something that could be a help us serve our mission. So I'm excited for the future.
I love the excitement. Yeah. We are too.
Yeah.
Bryce, aren't you excited?
I am excited. I get motivated listening to others speak of it. Maybe it's a little nerdy of me, but I do. I mean, I really think, I hope our listeners take away A couple of things. First, that compliance plus dot, dot, dot. How can you use these compliance efforts as an opportunity to unlock additional value within your organization? I think we've heard from Savannah and Kenny some great ideas that hopefully get our listeners started. And then the other thing, you know, we talk a lot about this is voluminous work. It's complex. And because it takes cost, it takes time, it takes effort. And when you're working through this in a cross-functional way, you can get lost in the details and projects just get blown out of the water, budgets get blown out of the water. So I really encourage our listener also think about that hybrid approach. What are the ways that you can centralize things in a way that supports optimizing efficiencies? I thought Savannah did a great job of providing some examples through technology and through resource operationalization as well.
Thanks, Bryce. Savannah and Kenny, I'd really like to thank you. You are our first guests on, and I hope you enjoyed yourselves today, but you've absolutely provided some critical insight to what we know our companies are really grappling with right now around this myriad of reporting requirements throughout the globe on so many levels. So really, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I hope you got a lot out of our discussion today. We really do appreciate your support, and it helps us reach more listeners like you. We also have a really great weekly newsletter that you can subscribe to by going to our FRV website. It brings you all of KPMG's thought leadership in one place, and that way you never miss out, whether it's on this podcast or online. Don't miss any future financial reporting episodes. Subscribe now on Apple, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Thank you for listening. I'm Louise Santa Cruz, and we hope you'll tune in again for the Sustainability Report.